Hi, I'm Maryam Ikeday, and you're listening to North of 40, where we tackle conversations around death, rebirth, soul-shifting experiences, and how to embrace our human condition when life throws you curveballs. Welcome to the season 2 finale of North of 40. Today, we have a very special guest, Judith Jacques, founder and cultural curator of the Black Women in Media Conference. Judith sits down with us and tells us the ins and outs of making this conference pop while suffering the loss of her mother during the COVID-19 pandemic. She shares with us the upcoming birth of her new baby and what it's like to galvanize women of color. She also reminds us the very important lesson of being your sister's keeper.
I just wanted to jump right in and say congratulations for getting the 5th annual virtual conference out. Like, can we talk about how amazing it was? First of all, I've seen so many conferences that have happened in COVID, and God bless them. You know, this is not an easy thing to do.
It's not.
And you guys pulled it off so, what appeared to be effortlessly. It was very classy.
Thank you.
The brains behind it was incredible. So just let me congratulate you on such an amazing conference.
Thank you so much.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about it. First of all, how did you know you wanted to do it this year, knowing that COVID was happening and you saw the writing on the wall? Like, what was your thoughts? What happened?
Okay. So originally in 2019, I thought, okay, you know what? I'm just going to do a huge rebranding for Black Women Media, because I didn't feel that we were really attracting our audience in a very strategic way. So in 2019, we did a huge rebranding. We did a website revamp, and, you know, our logos, our branding, everything. And I was like, you know what, for our 5th year, I want it to be big. So it was intended to be a live event in New York City, because that's where we host most of our events. And then turns out, you know, COVID happened. So I decided, you know, I'm still going to just push through, but I'm in the events industry naturally. So I already saw the trajectory of how live events were going to take place, especially the fact that I was working at that time. I was working for a large catering company as their business development director and sales director. So a lot of the large events were being canceled. So I already knew this was going to be a virtual event. So I said, okay, you know what? We're going to focus on it being a virtual event. And just at that moment, to be quite honest, I wasn't quite sure how we were going to make this happen. Because again, like you mentioned, this is new for everyone. And I just know that I wanted to do it in a strategic way where we could reach the masses and we can pretty much just give a wealth of information and a beautiful experience. Then I put it out there. Then my mom passed in May. But she passed through COVID. And I thought, since it's already out there, I guess we just have to push through, you know, us, especially as Black women. We never really stop. We just kind of just push through. We work so hard. So all I kept thinking was, you know what, maybe this is in its way a way for me to get my mind off of this loss and just really focus. So I just took all of that and poured it into Black women in media. So it was, I feel like it was a divine assignment that kind of distracted me from a major loss on a personal level. But at the same time, I thought of what should the audience get from this? And that's always what my goal has been, is to make sure that the Black women who are looking and who are participating in this 5th year feel as if they've gotten their contribution worth, their time worth, and this is something that they want to be a part of.
I can't imagine how anyone would not want to be a part of something like this. From the speakers to the honorees to the award ceremonies, everything was so well thought and put together with something that I was really, really proud to be a part of. Now, you had honored some very specific key women, Tamron Hall, Effie Brown. Like, how did you come up with this list? Like, what was some of the things, the criteria that you actually targeted to kind of honor these women?
Right. So with Black Women in Media, we tend to focus on all industries that fall under media, entertainment, communications, and digital and tech. So we want that full representation, because again, a lot of times when you think of Black women in media, most of the women who are depicted are either in entertainment or they're like in front of the camera in some sort of way, such as like, you know, news and journalism and so on. So I wanted to show this global hemisphere of how we are really in these industries, and we're just like, you know, doing a damn thing. Okay. So every single year, up until now, our fifth year, we've made sure to honor women in all of those industries and fields that fall under those categories. So we, of course, build a list every single year of the top women and the lead women or the pioneers who are within all of these categories. And we reach out to them. And, you know, those who feel that this is something that they'd like to be a part of do respond and so on. So the criteria is really just making sure, and especially women like Effie T. Brown, she's been in this industry for a long time.
She's been kicking butt for a long time.
A long time.
And a lot of licks too, on the strength right. of her Blackness, frankly.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And you know, a lot of people don't know the work that she's done. So it's an honor for me to have the opportunity to recognize her for the work that she's doing. And also at the same time, simultaneously educating our community on who's behind the lens, who's right. behind the stories, you know? So that's pretty much the idea behind, you know, picking our honorees.
So I got to go back a little bit because, you know, part of the journey of North of 40 started as my own personal journey. At 40, I had my first child, and at 40, my husband passed away very suddenly. Right after we had our child, she was only 8 months old. And that really caused me to really have a moment of digging in and really kind of pivoting. And what I'm hearing you say with the passing of your mom, birthing this conference in its fifth year, and also having your own baby kind of coming along. Can we talk a little bit about what that has been like in terms of the mental sharpening of the irons for you? Because this audience is very they tend to listen to very specific kind of tools that can help them in these types of challenging moments.
Right. So when my mother passed, I mean, you would have to go through that sort of loss in order for you to understand what it is. So we can only be empathetic to someone experiencing such a huge loss by, you know, just imagining, oh my God, if I lost someone of that equivalence. But you never are prepared for that level of loss. So when I lost her, it broke me. It broke me into a million pieces. But I feel that there were so many different parts of her that prepared me for the loss, if that makes sense. And that's why I was mentioned. That's why I mentioned earlier that I feel like it was a divine way of God making sure that I continue in this trajectory and making sure that this event happened, because at that moment I was just like so out of it. So it was a spiritual journey for me, you know, really thinking of, okay, this is your calling. You've committed to this. There are people who are expecting it. You don't want to let your community down. And of course, when you're going through the loss, you're like, okay, to hell with everyone. So, you know, at that moment, but, and also like you mentioned, you know, I'm expecting a baby, and I found out that I was expecting the day before she passed. So when I found out that you know, I was expecting, my husband kept on saying, babe, I think you're pregnant. I'm like, no, it's impossible. And you know why, whatever, so-and-so. And when, you know, we finally concretely knew the day before, I knew she was going to pass. So, you know, planned her funeral with my family, went through that heartbreaking experience and so on. It took me months because she passed May 28th. It wasn't until I'd say August, the last week of August, I could say I mustered the strength to open up a computer and to sit down with my team and say, okay, let's do this. We're going to have to, because I can't let these women down. And in doing so, it kind of, it healed me in a way, including the baby, because I realized that, okay, you're not just responsible for yourself, but, you know, to the women, the listeners who are there, who are listening, you have to you have to understand that as painful as this is, there's so much other factors of your life that is just waiting and counting on you. And had anyone told me that the conference and the awards would have been in any capacity a success, I would have just looked at you crazy because I wasn't even thinking of it. I was just thought, okay, this is not going to happen and I'm just going to move on. And, you know, like life wasn't even, I didn't even think of my future. But when you take each day a little bit at a time, even if you just do a small thing, a tiny thing, it's an accomplishment. And those tiny things accumulated to what you deem as a success. So I thank you for that.
I have to tell you, I have chills. There's so many things that you said that are just, number one, my daughter was born on May 28th.
Oh, wow.
And that, so when you said that, I'm like, whoo. Two, you're right. They, spirit, whatever you believe in, the universe gives you everything you need to get through that next thing. And my daughter looked up at me and was like, okay, Bob is dead, but we got to keep going. I'm still hungry. You still got to change my diaper. We still got to go outside. You still got to keep going, putting one foot in front of the other, even if it takes several months to do so. And I love that you gave that that tool, because that's essentially what it is. It's one day at a time, and the will to keep going, because you could lay down and not get back up, or you can find a little bit of mustard seed of will to keep going.
Yes, exactly. A little bit of mustard seed of will.
And I love that.
Get better.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So we have this little bun that's coming.
Yes.
And we have some time to kind of rethink and retool what we're looking to achieve for the future. Absolutely. What do you think is the future for Black women in media? Are we just a conference? How do we see this thing growing globally?
Yes, and it's very important that you mentioned globally, because that is the idea behind it. Black women in every facet, in every community, we play an integral role to how life goes on. We literally are the piece. We are the puzzle of, you know, the solution.
Did you see that election that we just saved? Did you see?
We saved it. We just saved the world. It's true. So, you know, with Black women in media, as you mentioned, I thought of its future. And I felt that, you know, with the past, because when we started in 2014, it started with the conference and awards. Mm-hmm. And that's initially what my vision was. But through the years, I decided this is not enough. We have so much more that we can do. So in our rebranding and our relaunching of Black Women in Media in 2019, the first thing we did was implement a membership program.
Yeah.
So we have a membership program that we did a soft launch on. And what that entails is a community of Black women in all of the industries that I mentioned. And we're even launching something much larger, which is a social network. You know, similar to LinkedIn and Facebook and so on, where we have our own space and we can communicate with each other and we can bond and network and build. So that's one of the biggest facets of Black Women in Media outside of our conference and awards. Wow. Outside of the membership, we're also launching BWIM Online, which is an online publication, which will highlight and feature Black women specifically in those industries, as well as everyday Black women who deserve recognition for the things that they're doing in their everyday lives. So this is just another platform that caters to Black women in a very strategic way in highlighting our just greatness. And then we have BWIM TV, which is launching in 2021. And that entails an online show, like a digital show, excuse me, in which we will highlight and also feature Black women in media, as well as Black women who are doing phenomenal things. We have a nightly news show that we're going to implement, as well as a Good Morning show that we're going to implement. All of them are going to be digital at this time, but you know, who knows to what
extent. It's only a step away from a deal for national network. So we're going to put it out
there. And I received that.
Put it out there. That's right.
That. Yes. Right. So you know, this is where we're heading. And, you know, we have our mentorship program in which we're implementing relationships with HBCUs predominantly, but we're also implementing programs within all universities and colleges that have a communications or journalism program or tech program in which we can target young Black women to be a part of our community and really learn from the women that we're honoring, the women that we're, you know, part of. Our membership entails so many different facets. A lot of it is the masterclasses and the workshops that we're going to have and the experiences that we're going to have every single month in which, you know, individuals such as yourself will come, you know, in front of our community to our members specifically and just give a wealth of information that they can build and learn from.
And what I want my audience to know, you guys need to take a very deep dive into the website. This is where you'll find all the tools that you need to not only pivot in your careers, but be inspired by people who look like you, be inspired by women who are doing the things that you want to do. Find ways to connect with individuals who are doing the damn thing. That's what this is about. So I want you guys to pay attention and listen to some of the jewels that Judith is dropping on us right now. So let's talk about self-care, because that's important too. And I know you're a busy bee. I know you're out there making it happen. We got a lovely husband. I'm sure he's massaging the feet, but what are you doing for yourself?
Well, that's something I had to learn to do. Because like you said, Black women, we don't stop. We just keep going.
We don't stop. We don't stop. We burn
ourselves out, and now we're mad at everybody. Meanwhile, we really didn't take the time to take
Right.
But, you know, it started off with prayer. It started off with prayer because I had to connect spiritually to a divine essence that was bigger than me, because I had to know that I couldn't do it by myself, because I damn sure couldn't. And then outside of that is meditation, which is separate from prayer, where you just go. I went into myself to breathe life into myself, speak into myself, and speak those positive things, those affirmations that I want to believe in, you know? So I had to tell myself, like, Judith, you can do it. Judith, you are brilliant. Judith, you are strong. Judith, you're magnificent. You're a beautiful woman. You're kind and you're honest and all of those things. And I had to constantly remind myself in order to tear away from the negative things that I built through my pain, my loss, you know, and even, you know,
all that trauma brain that we talk about, all that trauma that we carry with ourselves. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And then there's those spa days. Like during COVID, when especially in the summer, when it got a little bit less than, you know, what it is now.
Yeah.
So I would get my hair done. Getting my hair done.
Yeah.
My nails.
Feeling like a human being.
I had to apologize to the salon. I'm like, listen, I haven't been out since February, so please do not judge me.
Right, because I got hairs and things coming out of places that I'm coming out of.
Exactly. So I'm pretty much, those things matter. You don't have to necessarily go out, but even if you do it for yourself,
that's right.
You know, you grab your nail polish and you just take care of yourself. You take that moment. You know, sometimes I'm just going to Target and I put on makeup.
Yes.
Well, I do it all the time, but I'm just saying, like,
right. You know, but it really should be that specific for sure.
No, for real. It makes a big difference because you feel different about yourself and you can tell because people notice that, oh, wow, you know, she looks lovely and so on and what have you. But outside of that, I feel that I look lovely, you know. So, you know, in terms of self-care and what have you, then there's your health. You know, am I getting enough sleep? Which obviously I wasn't planning this event. So we're going to scratch that. But, you know, drinking enough water and my eating habits and, you know, even the environment that you're in. That plays a major role. You know, just I had to eliminate a lot of people out of my life. You know, after the death of my mother, I realized how short life is. I realized that aside from the fact that, you know, COVID may have killed her, but she suffered from 3 brain aneurysms, which placed her in a rehabilitation center, which put her in, you know, the line of danger in contracting COVID. But prior to COVID, it was the strokes. It was the brain aneurysm, which was caused by stress because of
the stress, the high blood pressure, and the people, and the things that you can't control, and all of that stuff.
Yes. Yes. So you need to start eliminating. Self-care is you need to do what's best for you. And even at that moment, you know, some people may come back into your life, but at this very moment, right now, I just feel like you're not serving me, not in a positive way. And at this moment, I cannot afford to have anyone depleting what I have.
Ooh,
it's not even enough. You know, because I'm building on top of it, right? So what I had to do was tell so-and-so, listen, we're just going to have to take a break, or I'm just going to have to cut you off. And that includes family, it includes friends, coworkers, anything that does not serve you. It could be a man, you know, it could be your partner.
Come on with the word today, because it's true. When my husband passed away, I realized two things. One, like you said, life is short. Number two, I'm going to do what makes me happy. I'm going to take care of me, whatever that looks like, however it feels. So if your feelings get hurt, I'm not even sorry about that, because I'm taking care of myself.
Myself, right.
100%. And sometimes family feel as if you owe them something because they're family. And no, it don't work like that either. Mm-mm.
Just because you're family, if you're not serving me, you know, if anything, family, they have this this level of entitlement,
yes.
You know, in which they impose themselves in every way into your life because they feel that they should and so on. And yes, maybe it is coming from a place of love, but it doesn't necessarily mean I have to accept it.
Not to mention, they also look at you as if you're still that child that they knew when you were three.
I'm not the same person I was 6 months ago. So you can't treat me the same way.
Right.
If you're not able to see that I'm evolving and you're not able to evolve with my growth, then you can't be a part of that. And maybe we just need to see each other another 3 years for you to fully grasp the growth that I've been able to accomplish. And, you know, family, friends, whoever, coworkers, jobs, whatever it is, you know, church family, you need to be cut off. And, you know, that's what I did. It went from family, church family, friends, my job, everything. Yeah. I was cutting people off like, okay, you know, this is not serving me. Because you're already dealing with so much, especially as Black women. We can't even begin to imagine the mental toll that this pandemic has taken on top. Because we're already doing a lot as it was. And then now, aside from now we have a pandemic that is just, it was poured.
Not to mention the pandemic. In addition to the pandemic is what I should say.
Right.
We have a president who was inciting fear.
Oh my God.
A president who was inciting people who want to attack us because of our skin, attack our bodies, kill us.
Yes.
Black women hold up the community, not just our counterparts, other Black people, but whites as well. Yes. Because I don't know about you, but I had a lot of people who were my friends,
yes,
who were of a different persuasion call me at the time when things were really getting crazy with the rioting and all of the, yes, protesting. And they call because of their white guilt, yes, just to see how I'm doing, to check in. And I'm like, but you ain't called me in the last 2 years. What are we talking about?
Right.
I'm not sure what's happening. And so we have to either A, make a choice to educate them on their white guilt, or not take the phone call and allow them to keep going to voicemail. But again, Black women are holding up communities in ways that most people don't have to do. And that's the thing that we carry. Those are the burdens that causes the stroke, that causes the hypertension, that causes all of these kinds of things. And if it's not for self-care, if it's not for the ability to cut off and take care, we would be in the ground. So I love and appreciate what you're saying, because it's spot on.
You're absolutely right, especially with the whole experience with the white guilt and so on and what have you. You know, when I learned of not my history, but when I started to really delve into just Black trauma from, you know, just from slavery and how generation after generation, it has directly affected us up until this moment. And I grew angry. Mm. So like 5-10 years ago, I was just this angry person. I had zero to no tolerance for anyone that wasn't Black, and especially their willful ignorance just enraged me. But I learned not too long ago that this could be an educational opportunity,
yeah,
for me to educate them and to teach them their natural willful ignorance, and the fact that they have, like, there's this global phenomenon that goes on with white people and how they literally do not have the capacity of comprehension. I say this in the most respectful, they all share this commonality of, oh, you know, well, my parents didn't have slavery, and you know, why can't we just get over it, and so on and what have you. But because the truth and the weight of the actions of their ancestors and how they benefit from it is too much to bear.
It's too much to bear. We can't even get homes. Right. I mean, it's inbred in the way that this society functions on a day to day.
Like, this is, I don't even know why I'm having this conversation with you. You must understand that because I'm Black, that I do not have the same opportunities. Well, look at the opportunities that Oprah Winfrey have and LeBron James and so on. You have to understand that they literally had to break the mold. You don't have to break the mold. You're celebrated in your mediocrity.
I am not. You can show up just as you are and be okay. We have to not only get a degree, go wash some dishes, go do this, go do that, and 10 times over before they even take a look at who we are and what we can do.
Right. Like, oh my God, like, you literally have to, like, do something extraordinary in order for you to be in a room of mediocrity.
We can't get away with just raw talent. We have to be able to do more. Period.
And the fact that I'm having this conversation with you, it that enrages me. But I have in the past taken time to educate them on that ignorance and just my standpoint and my experiences. But during COVID, my tolerance wasn't wasn't so much. You know, I was dealing with the fact that I lost my mom. I was dealing with the fact that we all are suffering some sort of mental illness because of the pandemic. And then George Floyd, which happens like almost every single week, every single day even, but to see the depiction of such a loss.
But to see it was just...
It was heartbreaking. I have two boys as well. I have a 15-year-old boy and I have a 4-year-old boy, and I'm raising my children in a country which... there's a group of people who are justifying this animalistic nature, this complete disregard for human life. And they're saying, well, you know, he could have been, the fact that you're, it doesn't matter who and what he was still.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This man sat on his neck, put his hands in his pocket and killed him for the world to see. And he was Black.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, it was super, there was just so much, like you mentioned, Black women. And men too, Black women, we're still going through it.
Yeah.
And still, we still showed up at the polls and we still made the damn thing happen.
Honey, not only did we show up, we registered to vote. We got friends to register to vote.
Yes.
Showed up at the polls.
Yes.
We did parties. Like, I don't know if you saw people dancing to get people to stay encouraged at the polls. Yes. I mean, the spirit of the Black people, the spirit of people of color too, has been the thing that this country rides on and has thrived on since its inception. And you said something so critical that I want to just kind of bring around for our audience, which we talk about very frequently, which is the mental health of the community. COVID has caused me to really get clear about my mental stability and instability, isolation, not being alone, trying to create community while we're still kind of social distancing.
Right.
How were you able to do that? Were you able to do that? Were you successful in doing that? How did your kids fare? What was that like for you?
Oh, in terms of the isolation specifically or
mental? Yeah, and how you were able to manage your mental, you know, just staying sane essentially.
Well, we didn't do too well. It was just something that we weren't prepared for, quite honestly.
Right.
It was something that we had to adjust. You know, myself and my husband, we had to figure out ways. There were most of the time, you know, during those first 6 months, most of the time was extremely difficult. You know, my son, he was going to school here. He was virtually learning, which was something completely different for him. So he had to just wake up from bed and then go into a virtual classroom and learn. And then I still had that pressure of telling him that, listen, you better make sure that you're doing well in school. You better make sure you get these grades. So I know he felt that weight on top of him, and the fact that, like you mentioned, he was isolated from his friends, his family, and so on. We didn't even allow them to really go outside because we didn't really know what was going on, you know, and we shared the same space constantly. It was a nightmare. it was a nightmare.
Yeah, it was pretty painful for us too. I have a 5-year-old daughter, and we were like,
yeah,
it is a lot.
It is, yeah. And you know what, we started to adjust, and then, you know, the loss of my mom didn't help either, you know, because now we're dealing with the loss and we're in the space, we're not stepping out. It was just, it was very painful. But what I learned was we have to be very strategic. Like my husband started taking them out for walks,
yeah,
and started taking them out to, you know, do extracurricular activities, and fresh air will do wonders. Those are wonders. That's all we honestly really needed. We set time for us to do things collectively, but most of the times we did things separately.
Yeah,
because we were always in each other's space. So if someone was in a certain space, then we made sure that's, you know, everyone else was in different spaces when we were either working or schoolwork or just, you know, our own personal time. We gave each other those times. And then when there were times for us to come together, we did that. But the key thing I felt was just stepping out, yeah, into fresh air and taking walks or, you know, playing basketball outside and just finding strategic things to do outside of the home where, of course, you weren't putting yourself in danger.
Right.
So that was the only thing that I really learned from that. But it was, the first 6 months were hell. It was terrible.
It was terrible. I can't lie. My situation was no better. But, you know, I wanted to do something in closing because I'm so grateful for your generosity of time. I want to be able to bring Black women in media as well as who Judith is into one succinct kind of message for our listeners. Just tell us what we can do as women to move the needle a little bit more for ourselves when obstacles show up, whatever those challenges may look like. Can we pull in the philosophy of Black women in media and who Judith is to kind of give us a parting message, if you will?
Absolutely. When you birth something, you in essence are that thing, you know? So just like North of 40, it's still you.
Yeah.
It's still a part of who you are because you are the brain behind this child. You know, you've birthed this idea, this concept. So in knowing that, especially with Black women in media, you know, this is, I always tell people, you don't have to necessarily be in media in order for this to be something that you can be a part of. This is a community for Black women, because Black women, we are multifaceted, and that's okay. You know, I could be a doctor and have a podcast. I can, you know, be a radiologist and, you know, have be a social media manager of some sort, you know, for other radiologists who are building brands and things of that like. So there's just so many different parts of us. One thing that I can say, which is extremely important, that I've learned, is to keep going. You have to have this innate belief that you are going to be successful and that what you have, you deserve first to be successful in it. And also others deserve to be a part of it. So I say this to say, because that was not always where I was, you know, it was this constant fear of, you know, will people believe in this? And do they, why should I be the one who has this platform? And you have all of these fears that basically are stimulated by your environment. And like you mentioned earlier, your past traumas, you just have to keep going. You have to have this innate belief, even through the fear, because I had fear. I had constant fear. Even during the conference, I was just like, oh my God, I don't know if people are actually feeling like this is something that's worth it. And even though people are like, oh my God, this is so amazing, in my head, I'm like, really, is it? You know, you just have to continue to push through these fears that you built yourself or your community has, you know, or your environment has instilled into you. You just have to keep going. And it's not hard for us as Black women because we naturally do, but we don't do so for ourselves. We keep going for other people and other things, but for ourselves, we have to keep going and have this innate belief that this is going to work, even through the failures, because that's a whole nother conversation, but even through the failures, understand that it is necessary. It is necessary for you to fail. It is necessary for you to go through these hardships and these obstacles. They're building you. They're building you in order for you to be successful. Black Women in Media is a community for Black women, for us to celebrate each other, for us to recognize each other, network and build with each other. I didn't do that. I was creating rooms and spaces in which I didn't even feel that I was worthy of, even though I created the room. And I finally said, I need to build with these women. I need to create more with these women. And that's what we're doing. We're building a committee, a board, and so on. And we're growing exponentially because I decided to have this innate faith that this is something that is needed. And I decided to just believe in myself. So that's definitely something that I want to share.
I'm Miriam Ikeday, and you're listening to North of 40.